Okay.
All right. Well, welcome to the August 11th, 2011 meeting of the ID and Variant Project. I am Jonathan Frakes, the team coordinator, and we will be going through some simple material today. I don't believe we will need Adobe Connect for this call. I believe we have some simple things to go through in this particular call. And I think point of order, we'll go through and do the roll call and then do a quick review of our action items and statement of interest recap, face-to-face meeting determination, work out the best timing for an overlap meeting with the Cyrillic team. Like to cover some consensus on the use of the script table from Kerry, but it's sounding already like a positive support for that. Like to get going to be sort of a seed format document draft from ICANN staff. I want to start working out the team writing assignments as we're getting closer to the deadline, and then we'll cover any other business and the schedule for our next meeting. So with that, I will pass the baton to Kim Davies to go through and do a roll call.
Okay, well, given that there's so few on the call, my list so far is Jothan, Andre, Francisco, Will, Shorter, and myself. If anyone else is on the call that didn't hear their name, please speak now. And I'm noting down apologies from... Giovanni? Was there others?
You did note my name, right, Kerry?
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear that you're on the call. You're now on the list.
Perfect. I just sent a reminder to the Latin group, and let's go ahead and continue through the agenda. So I think I went through, there's a review of the action items part on here, and that's really just to go through and identify what we have on our plate as far as previous action items. You know, we had put out there to review the draft questions and identify what's inside, outside scope, if there were answers. Some of you are responding. I think what we're going to do is incorporate where we got responses and treat the majority of that as sort of rhetorical questions, but include comments that we've received from people. Kim and I have been working on a draft work plan that we're going to use. We'll have to finalize that and get that done, as including the element item, which will be determination of a face-to-face meeting. We've got all but two statement of interest, I'd like to continue on. I did hear from Giovanni in his regret. He sent over some material, and one of the things he'd covered, and we can probably cover this in AOB, is to perhaps get a status of where the progress is in other variant groups, to hear how they're doing, how they're progressing, so that we can pace ourselves against their efforts.
So do you want to take that down as an action item?
Yes. I'd like to probably include that in each of our agendas, just so we know where people are pacing in other groups.
Okay. So,
but we can cover that in any other business or at the front during the action item review.
Okay. So I'm just writing for the moment. staff to prepare an update on the progress from other teams for future meetings.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, if there's just a verbal, I know that you overlap with a couple of groups. If you could share what you know from those, I guess we have the benefit of you being exposed to a couple other groups, so we could understand where those are at. But let's cover that in the any other business group.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to move to statement of interest. I think we're just missing a statement of interest from Harald Alvestrand and Eric Brown. Otherwise, everyone's got their statement of interest in. And I hope to be providing a revised statement of interest after a long period of time as a self-managed consultant in this space. So I should, by our next call, have an updated statement of interest. Are there any changes to people's statement of interest? Please do list them and update your statement of interest. Okay, now the real meat of the meeting is let's discuss if we believe it's going to be important to have a face-to-face meeting other than at the car. I think we're circulating it on the list. I had talked with Leo about getting a doodle poll out just to determine if people thought this was needed or not.
Carrie, question. What is the purpose of a face-to-face in the car? Isn't that past the deadline for our deliverable?
Well, it wasn't me that proposed it, but it seems to me like it would be good for the team to be able to summarize our things, you know, what our results were, and to catch any other things that we need to provide as input to hand off perhaps to a subsequent team. So if there's what I'd anticipate is we're all going to put our documents together, and you know, depending on the overlap we're able to do with the Greek or Cyrillic teams, there may be some things that we need to place in as a friendly amendment or capture. And so I believe that would be helpful. Now, face-to-face, you know, one thing I think we should capture is how many of us are actually going to Dakar, or will people be attending some of the remote attendance cells that are starting to form. So, you know, if nothing else, I think it would be a helpful, productive, this is my personal opinion, that it would be helpful for us to do some sort of a gathering for those of us that will be in Dakar. And I'm hopeful we'll have a good number of us there. It's not meant for anyone who wasn't planning on attending to be excluded. It's more a way to round out our work.
So just a suggestion. I think before tackling that specific question, which I also think will be impacted by ICANN's possible ability to provide funding and also what the other teams are doing, of the same vein, which I'm not up to speed on. The more immediate question, I think, is we have provision for an intersessional meeting, which most of the other groups are taking up the opportunity to do. Admittedly, our group has less issues to tackle than the other groups, but time is running short. That if we do want to have any kind of intersessional face-to-face meeting, that we really have to organize it immediately. So perhaps we can discuss whether there's any interest in that.
Well, I think I had sent out to the group an email to basically say, step up and tell us if you do. The initial belief was that not to trivialize the scope of what we're doing, but in contrast to others, ours seemed to have a bit more clarity in our mandate, that if it was going to be necessary to do a face-to-face meeting, that if someone believed strongly that we could step up and do that. Otherwise, we could use remote means, mailing lists, Adobe Connect on our calls to perform our efforts. Is there anyone with a strong feeling or a belief that we should do a meeting? So could I assume that the silence is that there's not a person stating that there is an importance to a face-to-face meeting that we would do intersessionally?
Jonathan, Carrie here. There's a parallel question to that. I'm not one of the ones. My silence is being correctly interpreted here.
Okay,
but
thank
you. In IETF context, where there is an email list that's associated with the productivity of a working group and face-to-face opportunities, the normative significance is ascribed to the list. What happens in the electronic communication is what determines what the group actually did, and face-to-faces can be enormously productive opportunities for discussing that. But until the output of such a meeting is folded back into the list and stamped with its authority, infused with its authority, nothing really happened. And I wonder which model it is that we're applying
here. Oh, I see what you're
saying.
Yeah. I think if I'm understanding you correctly, it's that we never met, so what did we do?
No, since we basically envision the distribution list as our primary work platform, what's the precedence there? I mean, if we do have a face-to-face meeting, can those in attendance of that meeting override what's been agreed upon, the consensus that's been reached on the list, or does anything said in a face-to-face have to be put to the list just to ensure that it really is a consensus statement?
I think that's a really good point. Now it's very clear to me what you're saying.
My suggestion would be, you know, to effectively take the IETF approach, that nothing in person unless we have, you know, effectively everyone there is inviolable unless it's gone through some review by the mailing list, potential for objection or raising an issue. And I think also on the matter of whether we have a face-to-face meeting in particular, sounds like on this call everyone's in agreement there doesn't seem to be a need for one. However, I'd suggest that get posted to the mailing list and give a deadline of, say, middle of next week, that anyone who disagrees has the opportunity to raise their hand and say, no, I think we should have a meeting.
So I think, you know, if I wasn't clear about it, maybe I should give a deadline of, you know, Friday for people to step up and speak up that we had a face-to-face meeting. Otherwise, you know, we have at our disposal to increase our volume of meetings or leverage the online tools. And, you know, I don't want to presuppose this. I think I'm more doing it for the sake of that we have an answer on this. Unless people think that we aren't giving appropriate opportunity for that face-to-face meeting to happen, I'd like to actually kind of call close to the issue on the list and snap the line that Friday is the absolute deadline for somebody to suggest something. But I honestly believe that we don't need to have a face-to-face meeting, especially given that the what's vetted on the list would override any, you know, socialized discussions. I think, you know, Carrie has done an incredible job of putting together a very valuable starting point. And you know, it's really our opportunity to build around that in a document, you know, to kind of capture some of the things. But aside from that, that's something that could be vetted on the list. So I'll propose to the list that we close this issue out, hearing nothing by Friday, and we move on and close that out. Any objections?
No objections.
That way we can just, you know, focus, and that's consistent with what we've been saying, you know, throughout the course of the the project. So I you know, I'm not opposed to, you know, traveling and meeting with people face to face. I like, I know and like all of you. I think it'd be great to see you. But I, as far as justifying the costs and, you know, timing and travel for people, I don't see it. Is that fair? Okay. So if we can move on to timing a common meeting with the Cyrillic team on the next item on the agenda. I think we have an opportunity because of the timing of the Cyrillic meeting. We definitely want to do an overlap with them. I had hoped to have some document to kind of share and overlap with them. I think we have the beginnings of that with our language table our variant table or whatever the correct nomenclature is for what Carrie supplied as being the universe of characters that would be allowed under the new IDNA, that we would want to have some other documents in and around this, but we definitely want to start having some dialogue with the Cyrillic team and potentially with the Greek team about you know, where we do have overlaps with their character sets. Now, the question is, they overlap every 2 weeks with us with their call starting just after ours. Or, alternatively, they do their call weekly as opposed to our biweekly, but it's always at the same time. It starts you know, in exactly approximately a half hour from now. So what we could do is schedule for one of our calls to take and just stay on for an additional hour with them or invite them to participate in ours and continue into theirs. So our opportunity would be for our next meeting in 2 weeks to do an overlap with them where we do either a common session for 2 hours or we do our meeting and then flow into their meeting. As far as scheduling goes, 2 weeks from now seems like one of the more utopian. Otherwise, it would be 2 weeks after, or we would do a meeting in between. Does anybody have strong feelings about this?
My suggestion would be to have an agenda for the joint session before we settle on the date. Have you spoken to the Cyrillic team leaders at all regarding this meeting?
No, the suggestion came in through Francisco.
Right.
The other Francisco. And,
right.
Arias. And what we want to do is make sure that we get that discussed. So I'll talk with the team lead coordinator for the Cyrillic team and find out and work out an agenda as an action item. I'm just writing that down. Okay. And then we'll socialize this on the list and figure out the best timing that works for people. In principle, does extending the meeting for an hour work for the folks on the team? If we were to overlap with the meeting in 2 weeks or if we were to overlap with the meeting in 4 weeks? Does anybody have a schedule conflict that stands out that we could do that one-time event?
This is Will. I do not have a conflict.
Okay. So with the Cyrillic team, it was something that they had proposed, so I will talk with them about getting more information about where, you know, what they were hoping to accomplish, and I believe that, you know, we definitely want to talk about the character overlap The Greek team apparently has had some delay in start because the team coordinator was in a large accident. So I will find out from them where they want to be. If Paolo is still the lead on that, or where they would be. So I will talk with Julie about where they're at.
Okay. Do we know where we want to be with this? And we are eliciting some statement of purpose for the shared meetings from them. And what happens if they turn the same question back to us, which is extraordinarily reasonable? What do we say?
Well, you're great minds think alike, Carrie. That was actually my next point, is to ask the team, what do we want from this? What do we think needs to be derived from a common meeting? What are your thoughts, Gary?
There's only one issue that strikes me, and it's a very important issue, but I'm not sure it's anything we can even deal with, and that's the situation where a given TLD would be asked to accept registration for labels that are glyphically indistinguishable, but collated from entirely different scripts. And that's the kind of policy thing that we're not supposed to be making suggestions about. We can stipulate that there is absolute visual identity between elements of all three scripts, same glyphs. It's not a matter of who thinks they're similar. They are the same.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
And that situation is the variant issue as far as the Latin script is concerned, as far as I can see. Everything else is a matter of cultural sensitivity. This ain't. But the venue where the impact of this has to be understood and addressed is individual registries. What are they going to do about it?
But we're talking about. I think the distinction is to the right of the dot or the left of the dot, being things that are in scope for us.
Well, I mean, if we are looking at, it's the thing we haven't decided right from the outset. Are we talking about character level equivalence, or are we talking about label level equivalence?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. Everybody clear on what we're talking about here?
Can you give some background?
Well, so essentially, the way it works right now is that in order for a TLD to be compliant with the current, I'm going to butcher what the actual term is, but you submit a code table that shows the list of allowable characters that you're going to register to the left of the dot. So if I am, for example, .cn uses the JET guidelines. So if you, and they submit a code table to identify what the characters are that are legal, and the presumption is that if it's not on the table, then it's not allowed. But that's something that a TLD can make a determination of what could be registered to the left of the dot.
Yeah.
Now, in the case where we move it to the right, we're focused on the TLD itself. And I think it shifts the issue because that's actually a global table. Am I mixing the metaphors here? Mixing things up. I mean, I didn't understand that our mandate was to identify what should be legal to the left of the dot.
And that's what I'm agreeing with.
That's why
I'm wondering. There is a clear issue. The three of the scripts are glyphically indistinguishable to greater or lesser extent. Actually, the anguish between Greek and Cyrillic is greater than the anguish between Latin and either of those two. So one of the things that we might do, which is it's both reasonable and elegant, is see how they address this. And when they've really teased out an issue that makes sense for them to be discussing, then we can chime in as it appears to us. One of the things that you may or may not note if you're in Greece, for example, is that the license plates on automobiles only contain those letters that also appear in the Latin alphabet, with the exception of military license plates, which have specifically Greek elements, and then you know immediately the military.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're looking at the inverse problem. I can give you an illustration. The classic illustration is that the Russian word for sugar, sachar, is written with glyphs that look exactly like a Latin C-A-X-A-P. You cannot see the difference. Okay. Yet it is C-A-X-A-P isn't a word in any Latin, in any language that I know of that's written with Latin, and a sequence of Cyrillic letters is not the same as a sequence of Latin letters, but they are not visually distinguishable. If a registry has a code point table that enumerates the Latin script, C-A-X-A-P will be in that table. If the same registry has a Cyrillic table where the Cyrillic letters, S-R, I don't even know how to pronounce them, it's an S-A-X-A-R in any case. There are two tables which are available for registration in a given TLD. That TLD, if it is sane, will also proscribe any script mixing, that if you have a label with an element from the Latin script table, it may contain no other elements than those that are in that table, and the same for the Cyrillic. But that still gives you a situation where someone can have caxap.tld and the Cyrillic sachar.tld. That has not been proscribed. And there is obviously some need for dealing with that. That's something that has obvious, insane consequences. But again, it's not what we are supposed to be talking about. And beyond that absolutely mind-bogglingly important issue, I can't see anything that we really need to talk with the Cyrillic or the Greek guys about. But again, the kinds of issues that beset this are apparent, or should be apparent, to a greater extent than the discussion between Greek and Cyrillic script groups. So we might want to put ourselves in the queue, and if the two of them can come up with something that really does make sense for us to be talking about in the context of the VIP study, then we'll gladly chime in. So if the question is turned to us, what are you guys interested in? Our statement ought to be, well, we can envision the following situation, the one that we're talking about now, but we would also expect it to be far more acute between the two of you guys than it is between us and either of the two of you. So what we want at this point is to be a fly on the wall, hear your discussion of this, and if it seems meaningful for us to chime in after the fact, we'll gladly do that.
That sounds pretty reasonable, although, you know, I could see that would we want to make the, so you've got this character table that holds the universe of characters. Do we want to, so one thought in how I'd want to approach overlapping with these groups and interacting with these groups myself would be that we take and we use the tool that the Unicode Consortium has for generating confusingly similar characters.
Yeah, but that thing has very, very loose criteria. Just about anything is comparable to just about anything else. I am no fan of doing this algorithmically, but I do believe ICANN itself has provided such a tool, and why not use that? I forget the name of it, the thing that they devised specifically to be able to...
this is the S-word algorithm?
Yeah. Whatever it is. It's the thing that rejected the Bulgarian BG because the gamma in Bulgarian looks too much like a lowercase r in Latin.
Go ahead, Jim.
Discordia.
Oh, okay.
I think you're talking about the SOAR algorithm.
The SOAR, yeah, that's it.
Oh, sorry, I thought it was S-word.
Well,
anyway, it's the same tool.
But just to clarify, I don't think that was the what
hasn't rejected the application for the...
It isn't. Okay. All right. Well, then simply scratch that remark. What I would suggest doing, what ultimately needs to be agreed upon at some place in all of this, and again, it's just not our business, although we can flag the issue, and that's this notion of being able to differentiate between characters, where there is the notion of the fonts use the same glyph, so nobody can see the difference. Even those who understand what the difference should be, you still can't see it. And then there are the subtle distinctions, the things that a language community using the characters will instantly recognize, whereas someone external to that community wouldn't recognize it, and it's gross cultural insult for the outsiders to tell the insiders what they need to do with their language. But if we do have some list of common fonts, what are the fonts that the various language communities that use Cyrillic are most likely to get out of the box when they install a Mac, a PC, or a couple of different Linux distributions? What situation applies in the Greek communities? And the Latin thing is the sprawling one. I mean, we've got a zillion more languages than they do to worry about. But I think we will all note that something like the A, the Greek A, does not look like the Latin A. The C, the C and the S in Cyrillic and Latin are almost invariably the exact same glyph. So there's some kind of, it's tenuous, but nonetheless, there's an objective basis for analyzing the fonts that are in wide enough distribution for us to have to pay attention to them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. Carrie, can I go back to completing my thought? I was almost done.
Oh, I'm done now, too, so.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So I think that's a good idea. I absolutely appreciate, and I think the team does too, when I dialed in, Andre was praising the table that you put together. I think as an initial overlap with the Cyrillic team, what I'm going to do is show them that this table was created, and it is the universe of characters that are legal in Latin. And encourage that they have something similar that they make as a product of their work. And when I was suggesting that we take the Unicode Consortium's tool for visual variants, what I would say is this could be done programmatically where we go through and generate those for each of the characters on our table. And we then get the results for visual similarity, whatever similarity according to Unicode, and then we identify those that are common to both tables, exist within the IDNA legal universe of characters within their language set. Does that make sense? So essentially, we get this wide response from Unicode Consortium's tool, and then we take of those results, find those that overlap for a given character with those on the Cyrillic set. So we have a reproducible process where we can identify those characters that we should focus in on that might be variants at the top level. Does everybody follow what I'm saying? And I think we could do something similar if we suggested that to the Greek team. And we could suggest to them that they do something similar as well.
Yes,
did everybody follow that? Any disagreement, agreement,
yeah.
Comments?
Yeah. Yes, at least I agree.
That at least is, you know, it's reproducible, it's trusted source, and, you know, I think it keeps it a bit more scientific and clinical and gives us an understanding. Because obviously we're going to want to work with the universe of what's legal within domain names, and we're going to want to work with those that are legal within the IDNA currently. And if we can identify that this is the process we went through, if there are future changes to the standard, we can at least say, here was the process we followed.
All right. I will write that up and propose that to the coordinators. And we'll come up with an agenda for the overlap meetings. Carrie, that example of CAXAP as sugar, et cetera, was good and helpful. And I think that type of character change, if somebody happened to be, who knows if it's somebody's last name, CAXAP, was applying for, the CAXAP Family Trust was wanting to register a TLD for all the members of the family, they could be in contention with a Russian sugar manufacturer who wanted to get their TLD. And so the challenge would be that, are those variants of each other? How do we determine that? What we want to do is just have something to say, look, this character overlap could happen.
Yeah, for sure. But I assume without the slightest question that the criteria that ICANN will apply to the graphemic separation of any two candidate labels is going to be far more rigorous than a TLD operator will apply, which in turn is going to be far more rigorous than a lower-level operator is going to apply. So there's certain common sense things that are going to be going to affect the discussion of some candidate root labels that we don't need to analyze up front. But again, it's absolutely reasonable for us to flag the kinds of things that do require policy consideration, and it would be reasonable for us to weigh them also. On what level is this critical, and what level is it tolerable?
Okay, I think we're in violent agreement on this. Okay, so some work to be done. Could we accomplish this in 2 weeks and propose to them that we do this in 2 weeks? Should we say this is 4 weeks out? That gives us time to get our documents together and theirs. And this would be just the Cyrillic. I have not had specific dialogue about a schedule or anything for the Greek team. Let's take that to the list so we can keep pace. So the next discussion is consensus on the use of the script table that Carrie assembled. I'd like to do it on this basis because I understand this isn't the Federal Commission of Jothan here, but I strongly believe that is a good basis to work from. And
well, if you don't mind just interrupting parenthetically, that is not a complete enumeration of all p-valid code points. I did apply some reasoning to it, stuff that seemed literally insane in context or incendiarily dangerous in context, a couple of dozen code points. If we're talking about the true universe, we have to render visible those things that require judgment. And that's a real simple algorithmic detail. That's just a question of asking Patrick Feldstrom, please, to push a button and run off that table. And then it's really authoritative. I mean, there is judgment applied to that thing that I submitted as a seed table. So, I mean, if anything
so should
is...
Should we supply... I apologize, Carrie. Go ahead.
No, that's it.
I'll absolutely be done.
Yeah. I'm perfectly comfortable with this group agreeing with the light hand that's been applied to the restriction of this thing and putting it forward as a seed table, which is the universe minus characters that fall under the following headings. And that is, you'll see those criteria in the accompanying text to it, but I can also factor those out and just put it as a header or a footer to the table itself. So if this group is going to come to consensus on anything that relates to the table I submitted, it's that the truncation vis-a-vis the actual universe it was reasonable and everybody is comfortable with it.
So what I think would be helpful is that we take, maybe we request Patrick to generate that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, here's what was omitted and here's why.
Yeah.
Here was the logic to that. And that way, I don't think that's our net product, but we can at least give some of the basis
as to why something was omitted or not included?
Oh, yeah, well, but those are objective principles. I mean, there is no, I don't think we should have this here simply because I don't feel like it apply to it.
Right, right. Gary didn't like the Win character, but he let it through or something like that. We want to make sure that it's as objective as possible. Well, because, you know, these standards do change over time, and they can at least replicate the logic that was behind, our choices to do this.
Well, I mean, one of them, almost the overriding principle, is when we got high up enough in the Unicode code chart for font developers not to include the code points in fonts, it really makes little sense saying it's okay to use these things for IDNs.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean that's the one of them. And the other is that there's this whole class of what we colloquially call apostrophoids, things that look like apostrophes, but they are, in fact, letters, and they are valid, that the issues that attach to the use of those things are so massive that it would be better simply to adopt a descriptive posture on them. As communities come forward and say, we have included these in our code point listings, then we can migrate them into the master table. But we're not going to put them in the master table to give people all ideas. Oh, wow, you mean we can have O'Neill and O'Donnell and O'Connell and O'Sullivan? Because you can do that in a half a dozen different ways. So if you're looking for a confusability nightmare, IDN A2008 doesn't prevent that. So from the p-valid universe, there's a certain smaller set, which is the one that's not much smaller set that's in the table I put forward. And the assumption is that registries will be far more selective beyond that, but that's already proven non-true. I mean, there are registries which are adopting the very clear principles of no script mixing, but beyond that, if it's p-valid, then it is also registrable. So in one sense, the horse is already bolted when we're trying to shut the stable door.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So I think the notes on that are there's consensus that we use the table, but we do want to include the p-valid universe and explain where trimmings occurred and what the objective criteria were on those trimmings.
Again, that explanation is already in the long document. So.
Okay. Okay. All right. The next agenda item. So I didn't hear anyone say that they wanted to do something different, or it seems to me like everybody is on board with using that script table. No arguments.
No objections.
Okay. Okay. I think it's great. Carrie, I'm grateful. It was very good work. Thank you. Next, the seed format document. So there will be, but we don't have it yet, a seed format document draft from ICANN staff that goes through and lays out the format we'll use for this in our ultimate product. I don't think that has to be in the way of our team work, but we'll ultimately, you know, part of our work towards the end will be migrating our text patches into a format so that they've got some consistency across all the different team projects. That's not done yet, but we'll have it soon, and we'll start to be able to incorporate our different writing materials in. The next item is the team writing assignments. So, Carrie, you've been doing a lot of work. I have been putting together some drafts to kind of go through and explain use cases in browsers and email and different things like that that I'll start to circulate to the group. But I want to start to formalize some team writing assignments so that we have people have some work and ability to contribute to this document other than simply commenting on what they do or don't like, that folks can take on a piece of this. But I also want to divide that up so that it's reasonable. What I may do just to get better participation in the next call is that the people on the call will assign writing assignments to the people who aren't on the call. That'll help drive more participation, I think, in the next call.
Meanwhile, we'll start with, Carrie, you've done a significant amount of heavy lifting. I think in some of the materials, for example, the San Francisco presentation contained a lot of helpful material. I'm synthesizing a document to get together. What I anticipate is that I'll be doing a significant amount of writing. I do want to have help and assistance from others, as well as their opportunity to feed in their work. And I'd like to vet that on the list. So I'd look initially for a volunteer to help put together the drafting of the different variant definitions. And I would look for somebody to be a volunteer for the use case and the user experience. I would look for somebody to be a volunteer for the, what's the other one? The character, come on, I need another cup of coffee today. Basically the definitions in and around the varieties of what we call variants. Variant conditions. So if there's people who can allocate some time towards drafting, there'll be a call for that on the list for people to volunteer. And where we don't get volunteers, we'll make assignments. And I'm half joking, but I think we can assign pieces to folks who don't attend the next call. That should drive more attendance on the next call, and that should also get us a good list of volunteers. Next item, and I want to be sensitive to the timing here for folks who have a meeting at the next hour. Any other business? And this is where I wanted to see if we could have folks who are participating across other groups could comment on where other groups are at. And I apologize that we're down to such a short amount of time. But if that could happen in 5 minutes or less, it would be appreciated. Kim, could you mention something? What groups are you working with?
So I haven't actually been participating in the calls of the other groups for the last few weeks, simply because I've had another big project I've been working on. The staff that support the groups send weekly updates to the other staff. Had I known this would be dropped on, I would have reviewed it just before this call so I could share. But Francisco is on the call. Maybe he can update on the Cyrillic team just in 30 seconds.
Sure. The Cyrillic team worked first on the definitions. They went through all the definitions in detail, and they found a couple of suggestions. And I believe those were already included in the document that is published. They are now working on the questions document. They are going one by one, all the questions. What else? The Chinese team, they are already working on a draft structure for the report. They subdivided themselves in three groups. In order to work better on the specific details, I believe one group is working on SCOP. The other group is working on registry operations issues. And I'm sorry, but I forgot what's the other group doing. Which other group? Well, the Greeks, in that case, as you may know, the coordinator, Vangelis, had a car accident just before a Singapore meeting, and he is recovering, so they have been, they have only had one call, as I believe, but they did writing assignments, so people are already working on writing. The Devon Agri team, they had already a face-to-face meeting. They are the only team that has already done that. They did it on July. And apparently that worked pretty well. They worked for 2 days, and they also did writing assignments to team members. And they seem to be doing pretty well. They seem to be pretty advanced compared to the rest of the teams in that respect. And those are the ones that I remember right now. And I think
okay.
they are getting up then.
Thank you, Francisco. And the one comment I have was that I was trying to look at what the Cyrillic had done in preparation for discussion on the Cyrillic case, and I don't see anything up on the cross-community wiki for the project for Cyrillic. Is that something that might be updated soon so that we could see where...
Yes. I think Patrick is working on publishing the minutes and the recordings of the calls. That should be up soon. Other than
okay.
that, there is no document already.
Okay, Patrick Jones?
Yes, Patrick Jones is the liaison for that case.
Okay.
Study.
Okay, I may reach out to him just to see where their state is, and I'll be in touch with their team lead to get this...
Alexei, yeah.
Yeah, to Alexei. Okay, thank you on that. And I guess our next meeting will be in 2 weeks on... what is that date? Is that the 8th?
25th.
25th of August. And thank you all for your participation today. Any last-minute burning issues before we would close the call? Anything? The only comment I would make is if you could encourage your peers on the list to be more in participation. I'm going to be doing the same, and we will be proceeding forward with a lot more activity. I think summer has gotten the best of us, many of us. There's a lot of overlap with holidays and travel. So, we should be seeing a bit more robust activity as we're getting closer towards the end of August and leading into September. But we have a lot of deliverables, and we want to make sure that we get that all done. Well, everybody, thank you very much for your participation in your time today. And hearing no burning issues, I'd like to close the call. Thank you very much, and I will see you on the list or talk with you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Kim Davies.
Left.